please welcome Megan Hicks.
Several years ago, I was at a women's drumming circle, and one of the women in the circle just put out a little thought. They grabbed me by the throat and wouldn't let go. And the thought was, you know, I wonder what Job's wife was going through when Job was enduring his tribulations. And so I wrote the book of Job Bob. And I come by my Texas-Oklahoma accent, honestly, too. I revert. You know, right before that cow pie hit the fan, I got a little sort of a heads up that something big was coming my way. Here's how I knew. I was waiting for my red-eye flight home from Washington, D.C. at National Airport. We were just finishing the Norms rally that year. You've heard of Norms? The National Organization for the Restoration of Moral Standards. I was on the planning committee that year, and my husband, Joe Bob, had delivered the keynote address. Now, Joe Bob flew out right after he made his speech because he had a big meeting in El Paso, and I stayed to clean up some details, and so I was taking the midnight flight home. Sitting there at Reagan National Airport reading my magazine, when from either end of the concourse, I saw these two big old cowboys approaching each other. They were older men, mature men, very fit, beautiful, hand-tailored, custom-tailored Western suits, handmade boots. Big old Stetsons, one had a black hat, one had a white hat, and they're waving at each other, and they're hollering and hooting and whistling, and they come together right in front of me, clap each other in a big old bear hug, and one of them says, "You old devil, where have you been?" The other one says, "Well, good Lord, I reckon they'll let just about anybody in Washington these days, won't they?" And the other guy says, "You know, I missed you at the Norms rally. Oh, I wish you could have seen my boy Joe Bob. He delivered the keynote address, and let me tell you, he made me proud." Here's where I put down my Southern living, and I started to do some serious eavesdropping. That cowboy said his boy, Joe Bob, had delivered the keynote address. Now, you have heard of Joe Bob. I mean, even back then, he was making the cover of Texas Monthly and Guidepost Magazine 2-3 times a year. And now, since the cabinet appointment and the Nobel Prize, well, I mean, everybody knows who Joe Bob is. And in that day and time, as now, Joe Bob was no man's boy. So I'm listening really hard now. As that old cowboy says, "You know, they just don't come like Joe Bob anymore. There is not a whiff of scandal about him. There is no corruption going on. He doesn't cheat on his wife, doesn't cheat on his taxes. I mean, that is a righteous man." The other old cowboy says, "Well, hell, what do you expect? You know, for my money, Joe Bob lacks imagination, but the boy's not stupid. You think he's going to drop his bread butter side down in the dirt? Ha, I don't think so. I tell you what, though, old son. You let me put a hand in his affairs, make things interesting for him. Then we'll see who's a righteous man." That old cowboy says, okay. I give you carte blanche. His business, his social standing, his family, do your worst. Just don't you touch the man himself. Do you understand?" They shook hands and went their separate ways and left me sitting there in the concourse wondering if hallucinating might be yet another one of those symptoms of menopause nobody talks about. Well, it didn't take long for me to know that I was not hallucinating. Next morning, we were home, Joe Bob and I, out on the deck having our coffee, finishing breakfast. I was just clearing up the table, and we were getting ready to pack up the car to take our car trip down to Austin, to the hill country where our son, Joe Jr., had a ranch. Every year, the family gathered for a big family reunion. We had a big, long weekend. The kids and grandkids had all been down there for 2 days already, and we were getting a late start on account of the Norms rally. Well, I'm clearing the table, and the doorbell rings. The houseboy answered the door, and I looked in to see standing in the doorway, there was Cecil. Joe Bob's ranch manager must have driven in all the way from the panhandle. He had to have driven all night long, and he looked a mess. His hair was wild. His eyes were bloodshot, sweat dripping off his face. There was black streaks. He was shaking so hard he had to hold on to the door just to keep from falling in. He said, Joe Bob, I am so sorry I have to tell you this, but it's gone, Joe Bob. It's gone. The whole cattle operation is gone. Joe Bob says, Cecil, what? Tell me. Cecil goes, it was about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock this morning. I was in my camper, all the boys in their campers. We were waiting till dawn to load the cattle onto the boxcars or onto the cattle cars. And I heard this high-pitched hum coming outside my camper. I stuck my head out, and there in the sky is a little black plane, no bigger than a crop duster. Not a mark of identification on it, but it came over the feedlot and just kind of hovered there still, and a ball of light fell out of the belly of that plane, and when that light hit the ground, Joe Bob, it was nuclear holocaust. I mean, everything went up in smoke. The boys, Joe Bob, all the boys are gone. I don't know how I escaped to come and tell you. Well, right then the phone rang. I picked it up. It was ESPN wanting to know if I had a comment to make in light of the Dallas Cowboy walkout. The Dallas Cowboy walkout. I mean, in those days, we owned the Dallas Cowboys, and this was the first I had heard of a Dallas Cowboy walkout. Another phone, Joe Bob's phone rang. He picked it up. It was his oil and gas attorney telling him T-Bone Pickett, the great corporate raider, had just made the mother of all hostile overtures, and he was in the middle of a takeover, and his oil and gas industry was kaput. Joe Bob, he picked up the TV remote. He flicked it, and there on the screen, he wanted to see if there was any news about the Dallas Cowboy walkout or T-Bone Pickett, and there on the TV screen was the tight headshot of a little newscaster broadcasting live from a disaster scene right outside the hill country in Austin where a freak tornado had just touched down. She was saying things like, total devastation. She was saying things like, no survivors. She was saying things like, names being withheld pending notification of next of kin. Well, in that moment, my heart broke, because I knew the names of those tornado victims, every godforsaken one of them. Wasn't any time at all before the news showed up outside, the media and their trucks and their microphones and their cameras, and they're peppering Joe Bob with questions. He met them all on the front porch, hugging the family Bible to his chest. And to every question they posed him, he had one reply and one reply only. Joe Bob said, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Fast forward 1 year later, we did not make it to the Norms rally the following year. I mean, not that we were invited, but even if we had been at that point, we could not have scraped up the plane fare. We were living in a little rent house in Grand Prairie. Joe Bob was working 18 hours a day trying to get his finances back together again. I was working sun up to sundown, just trying to get through the day. That part of my life, I felt like I was walking uphill through fog and ankle-deep mud. On the anniversary of my children's deaths, I was out at the cemetery laying flowers on their graves. Blue bonnets were in season, and I picked them and decorated their graves with them. And I looked up, wasn't the least bit surprised somehow, to see those two old cowboys I had seen in the airport. They were arm wrestling over a new headstone. The one old cowboy got the other one's arm down. He stands up. He says, "Ha, she's mine." The other cowboy stands up, dusts off his sleeves. He retains as much dignity as he possibly can. And he says, "Well, you know, in this game, you do lose some. You win a lot, you lose some." He said, I would like to point out that you didn't get Joe Bob like you were so sure you were going to. Everything he's gone through, that man is still unwavering faith." "Well, hell," says the cowboy, "of course. I mean, come on. Everything a man has is negotiable as long as his rear end is intact. You didn't let me lay a finger on him. I tell you what, you let me inflict some pain. We'll see who's a righteous man then." "So hurt him," says the other guy. "Hurt him already. Just don't maim him and do not kill him." I got home from the cemetery that day, and my husband had broken out in lesions from head to toe, oozing infected lesions. Suddenly, my job went from grieving mother to live-in practical nurse. I mean, it was like dealing with toddlers again, only this time there was a lot of heavy lifting involved. I had to bathe that man down with colloidal oatmeal soap every 2 hours around the clock. I was exhausted. I was alone. I was grieving. The only person I could turn to for comfort flinched every time I approached him. And one day, I had had it, and I said, "Joe Bob, why can't we just say the hell with it and die?" That was my fondest wish, to lay me down to sleep and never have to open my eyes again. Well, my husband was sort of the prince of the platitude. He said, "Well, honey, now that sounds a lot like a woman to me. You know, you take all the good stuff, you don't complain about that, but as soon as a little adversity hits, all of a sudden you want to throw in the towel." A little adversity? Oh, this went way beyond adversity. This was hell. And there was worse to come. We got an ethics committee investigation in the form of three elders who showed up every afternoon on the front porch to pray with Joe Bob. They'd come in, I'd serve them iced tea, and they'd sit on the Davenport, and he'd be there in his Barca lounger, and they'd tell him how good confession was for the soul. Ask him if he had searched his soul and found a hidden sin that might have brought this disaster upon him. Joe Bob honestly did not know what had hit him or why, and he maintained his innocence through it all. And that's how it went day after day after day after day until one of those elders asked him if maybe, just maybe, the lesions on his body were the symptoms of a sexually transmitted disease. My husband liked to levitate it out of his Barca lounger. He said, bolt upright, and he came down sputtering, and he said, "If I have lurked in my neighbor's doorway, if I have lusted after a woman, may my wife grind for others, and may others have their way with her." Whoa. Honey, that got my attention. He is calling on the powers that be to punish me in the event his behavior has been less than circumspect. You know, in that moment, I got me a little epiphany and something snapped. Something snapped in everybody that day because those elders wasn't any time before they all just stomped out, leaving their iced tea glasses sweating on the coffee table. All of a sudden, there was a clap of lightning, thunder, Wind, a torrential wind blew up. I mean, the kind that blows up in Dallas. We were seeing trash cans, lawn chairs, tricycles going sideways across the picture window. And then rain, torrents and torrents, sheets of rain came falling down. The kind of storm that usually, in Dallas, will blow itself out in 20 minutes. But this one just kept going on and on and on. Droned me into a deep, deep sleep. And in my dream, I saw those two big old cowboys out in the backyard. They were playing mumbly peg with pitchforks. I don't know how long I slept, but I do remember waking up. I felt a fresh breeze blow across my face. I squinted my eyes open. The sun was so bright, I had to open them slow. There in the daylight sat my husband, Joe Bob, upright, dressed in a clean white shirt, hair combed, his face as smooth as a baby's. A light of animation in that man's eyes I had not seen for 20 years. And he was hanging on every word coming out of the mouth of that big old cowboy in the other chair. Oh, Joe Bob, you did good, boy. You did good. I am so proud of you. Oh, I knew you could do it. I knew you got a little testy toward the end there, boy, but your faith never wavered. I am so proud of you. Now listen. You think you were on the inside track before. You haven't seen anything. I'm going to give it all back to you, Joe Bob. I'm going to give it back double. Your money, your influence, your power, your family, Joe Bob, I will raise up a new line for you. I will see to it that your grandchildren grow to adulthood and see a healthy grandfather. What do you think of that? Well, now it was my turn to levitate. I sat up and I said, hold on there, cowboy. Just tell me something. Okay, you're going to restore Joe Bob's fortunes. I think that's great. You're going to give him the power and the influence he deserves. That's wonderful. He can handle it. You're going to raise up a new line for him. New children. What? Whose body is going to be carrying those babies? Whose ankles are going to swell? Who's going to be hugging the toilet with morning sickness? And while Daddy's off being a big shot, who is going to be home wiping bottoms and noses? And have you even factored menopause into this equation? Joe Bob said, Rachel, get a grip. But the old cowboy, he was just as smooth as the paint on a new sports car. He says, Rachel, honey, we weren't quite expecting you to join us just yet. Listen, I hear your concerns, darling. I understand exactly what you're saying, and let me tell you, you don't have to worry about a thing. Because you know what? I am in the miracle business. And I got it covered, babe. You are going to make medical history, and henceforth, you are going to be the standard by which all motherhood, all womanhood is judged. What do you think of that? Not much. Said, what? You're going to give me new children that are going to be prettier, smarter, dearer to my heart than the ones that died in that tornado? And that's going to make it up to me, huh? Is that what you're trying to do? He said, Rachel, I have a balm for that pain. I can comfort you. And he grabbed my hand between his two big ones, and I felt comfort suffuse me like a narcotic. And I jerked my hand away, and I said, no! I choose to remember whom I have loved and where I have been. You will not get my history from me. Joe Bob was as mad as I ever saw him. He said, Rachel, for God's sake, do you know who you're talking to? I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I think I do. Well, Rachel, you know that when we signed on for this team, that there would be trials. I said, honey, you tell me something. What are we on trial for? Before any of this mess even started, I heard straight from the cowboy's mouth, I heard him say, "You are a righteous man. So what are you on trial for?" And then I got another epiphany. I said, "Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't even have a dog in this fight. This is a guy thing. Listen, you boys, hash it out amongst yourselves. Just factor me out of your equations, okay?" And I twisted off my wedding rings, put them there on top of the family Bible, and I started to walk out the room. Joe Bob said, "Rachel, get back in here. You know I can't have children without you." I turned. I said, "Honey bun, the man's in the miracle business. You'll do fine." And in as much time as it took me to pack one bag, I was out of there. Here's how it all turned out. The Lord restored the fortunes of Job, all that he had, his lands, his cattle, his possessions, his sons, his daughters. And all of his friends and all of his brothers came to Job to break bread with him in his house, to pray with him, to comfort him for the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. Plus, there was the Time Man of the Year Award and the Nobel Prize and the cabinet appointment. He made the sexiest sextagenarian of the century from People magazine. And that little wife of his, oh boy, she shows up on the cover of Red Book and Ladies' Home Journal every time she pops out another kid. Beautiful, beautiful kids. Me, well, I gave Joe Bob about a year and a half to get his finances back in order. And then I hired me the meanest divorce attorney in Dallas, and we sued him for every cent I could get. And you know Joe Bob? He didn't complain. He just signed on the dotted line. Because I think he knew in his heart that I had earned everything I was asking for. I took all that money and I made a foundation for victims of natural disasters. I hired the best talent in the world to administer the organization so I can be out in the world, out in the field, all the time. And whenever you find a tornado, a tidal wave, an earthquake, a volcano eruption, anything that your insurance company would refer to as an act of God, I'm there. Teaching the victims of those disasters how to make survivors of themselves. It's a high calling. It's a fulfilling vocation. And for a childless mother of my circumstances, I reckon this is as much as I'm going to get for living happily ever after.